T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Steele Talk, and I am your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do, is be here with you on a Sunday night, and we sure appreciate you sticking and staying with Steele Talking. All right, issues of working from home, returning to work, hybrid and flexible workplaces, and other workplace well-being topics. Those are some of the things we're going to try to cover in this half hour, because Teresa Glom, who is the Toro Company David M. Lilly Chair in the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota, is joining us. Now, her mission in life is to improve the lives of workers. Our guest is brought to you by Shift Real Estate Hotline. Oh, so many questions, so little time. Welcome, Teresa. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it is such a delight to be in conversation with you after being such a fan for decades and just being uplifted by you and your voice and your singing. So I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I have to tell you, I watched some of your speeches, your TEDx, UMN, and I just thought, okay, I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't seem like there's anything we can do much about. So I want to know, first of all, when it's your mission to improve the lives of workers, where do you start?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I always try and communicate to workers is that sometimes there are really small changes that we can make. Small routines, small practical disciplines that can sometimes have a big impact in how our work lives go. Work is such a core, pivotal part of most people's lives. And so to think about ways that they can make their job just a little bit better is really what I'm after. I think a lot of people think about getting a good job, and I challenge them to think about making a job good. Now, that's not saying that there aren't some really bad jobs out there, but I think sometimes we can, with some small reframing and some small tips and techniques, we can make work a little better.
So is it our job to make the job good?
Well, I think that we obviously want to work for good jobs for people, good managers, good employers, and create working environments in which people can thrive and flourish. But I also think that it is within, employees' control to try and improve things, at least at the margin, make things a little bit better.
You know, in the last 30 years, I would say, because I've been here about 40 years in Minnesota, and I am amazed at the changes that have happened within the framework of a good job, right? It used to be a time where young people wanted to go and work for corporations, but I remember a time my mother used to tell us, and her 6 children, she used to tell us, you know, it'd be great if you guys didn't just get a job, that you created a job for someone else. And so you got a lot of young people today that are really looking at starting their own businesses, finding a way to get it done. How does this interrupt or help the jobs that we're seeing most Minnesotans in today?
The pandemic, you're saying?
No, not the pandemic, but in the sense that there are so many young people that are starting their own businesses that they're not going into the corporations. They're not going into the small nonprofits. A lot of them are starting their own businesses, and it takes away from some of the jobs that are needed in other industries. How does that affect what is happening when it comes to the jobs that people want or the jobs that they hate and wish they had?
Absolutely. And I think that entrepreneurial spirit for people has really changed and had them kind of rethink, gosh, if I'm going to be doing this for decades, it better be something that fits my talents, my skill set, my capabilities. So I do think that a lot of young people are really not having a sense of a career where, okay, I'm going to go work at this big company and I'm going to stay there and I'm going to retire from that company. But they might think, well, I'm going to go over there and get this skill set and I'm going to learn this new thing, or I'm going to, you know, work on these projects. And I'm going to be really flexible in terms of how I think about my work life and my career over time, because careers are long. And so, you know, thinking about what people want from their jobs, they typically want, you know, some sense of growth and learning over time. And I think as young folks do think about, okay, well, how can I learn and maybe then go and embark on something myself? I think there's still a role for a lot of those bigger corporations, but it's not that same role where, you know, you're sort of with that company for a really long, long time.
Yeah, and a lot of the companies are so new now. The leadership, you know, we know that leadership is at the top, right? They're the ones that really create that environment. But if I'm trying to help, you know, make my environment at work better, you know, if I'm coming into the office, where do I start?
You know, I think a lot of the work environment and the work culture is really about trying to craft a workplace where you can connect with people and feel some sense of psychological safety with the folks that you work with. I think that's kind of at the core. When we look at what people want from their jobs, it's usually a couple of things. They want to feel connected with others, and that may be connected with their customers, their clients, their manager, their coworkers. They want to feel a sense of autonomy or control over their work environment. They want to feel a sense of competence. They want to feel that they're good at something, that they have a sense of mastery. And then they want to grow and learn. And so I think, you know, if you think about how to create those work environments, there's a big role for people to just have really good conversations. And, you know, one of the things about the pandemic experience that I think is really exciting is people are having conversations about work and work roles and responsibilities and how to work and how much to work in the office and flex time and flex space. And so I think for so many people, they would just kind of get up and go to work. And now they're really sort of saying, okay, how can I kind of craft a new normal? And what is that going to look like? And what parts of my job are, you know, how should I do them, right? And so I think that that's one of the things that's been a real opportunity here, to be a little bit more intentional about what my work looks like in the future.
Initially, when you joined to do this, to improve the lives of workers, was it easy for you to define the metrics for improvement, and how far do you think we have come?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's, and a lot of my research is really on things like workplace mood and workplace stress and happiness. You know, I think for some, we've moved the needle on some things, but in terms of people being kind of engaged and satisfied with their work, it really fluctuates. So the metrics that I have been looking at are really around the extent to which people can kind of feel positive and flourish at work. And a lot of my work looks at sort of small interventions that people can do in their work settings to try and foster a good work environment. So I think, you know, I think one of the things that'll be really interesting is to see how the, you know, flexible work practices that a lot of companies are going to be taking on in the coming months changes people's sense of, you know, engagement and satisfaction. And my hope is that we actually see some really nice increases there.
Well-established corporations and organizations have a culture that has been well-defined for so many decades. And it seems like it's almost impossible to break that or to correct that or to build on top of that to make it even better. You asked on your website, what could happen if we were more intentional and recognize the power we have to improve our work lives? And I have to tell you, I've had jobs where I didn't feel any power. So how do we recognize our power and harness that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of it is really thinking about what kinds of things, because I agree with you, there are some things that you don't have a lot of control over in your work environment. But, you know, one of the things that we have found in our research is that people for the most part, and kind of enjoy the work that they do, right? And they, if they can get a sense of pride and accomplishment and connection from that work. And so I think sometimes a lot of it is really thinking about how do I kind of be a little bit more present? How do I reflect on the good things that are present in my work environment? So in some of our research, we looked at just, you know, the practice of reflecting on good things that do happen in the work environment. And we found really powerful effects that it reduced people's stress. It lowered physical symptoms and mental symptoms. They were able to detach from their work, and it even lowered their blood pressure just from sort of reflecting on good things, because we kind of have this tendency as humans to pay more attention to negative things in our environment, right? I mean, 20 things can happen to you and 19 of them go perfectly fine. And what's the one that you're going to go home and think about and ruminate on? It's kind of that negative one. And so, you know, most of the time when we ask people about things that are happening at work, there's a lot more good things than bad things. In fact, in our research, we've shown that good things are about 5 to 10 times more frequent in work environments, but it's the bad things that really pack a punch. And so, you know, I think part of it is trying to reorient to some of those positive things. And that's not to say that we shouldn't try and fix the negative, but I think there are some things that we can do in our own that are in our control to focus a little bit more on positive things at work.
I remember decades ago, it was really easy to go to your boss and sit, you know, ask for a meeting and say, look, I just want to find out what course am I on? Where do you see me 10 years from now? And is there something I need to correct? You could literally go into their offices, make an appointment, and be able to sit down and talk with them. Today, it's a whole nother world, especially since the pandemic. And now that the pandemic is beginning to wane, the well-being topics are really, really being talked about. I was just in the West Metro, here in the Twin Cities, where we saw a bunch of people, a lot of women, outdoors at a big parking lot, just exercising their hearts out. Music is blaring. It was a blast. And I just thought, okay, I thought about you tonight and how well-being is so important to keep us calm, to keep us focused, right? And so now that the pandemic is waning, do you think we will spend more time as employees dealing with or thinking about well-being topics that we can refer to help us feel stronger, to get better, to move up and forward?
Yes, I absolutely think that one of the things that the pandemic has maybe helped us is to think about the importance of that. It's had such a huge impact on well-being and health, and some colleagues of mine at the University of Minnesota looked at depressive symptoms and life satisfaction before and after COVID, and, you know, it's really taken a hit. But I think it's also shown us the importance of things like exercise, sleep, connecting with family, and the importance of kind of building in some moments for recovery. As I'm talking with people about, you know, their work from home experience, one of the things that I'll often hear is, you know, I actually have time to go outside, walk around the block, step outside, you know, maybe sit down and have something to eat rather than, you know, eating at my desk, and to build in some of these small breaks for recovery, which are really important. I also feel like the you know, as people think about returning to work and what's the right mix, most of what I'm hearing from a lot of employers is they are going to have some sort of flexible work. I'm hearing a lot of people saying sort of, you know, 3 days in the office, 2 days at home. And I think that will help people craft work lives that can that for which they can flourish. Now that's for a lot of sort of office workers. I think there are some jobs that, you know, you can't work from home. And so, you know, your guest earlier, Elizabeth from Chow Girls, was talking about, you know, the difficulty in kind of that restaurant context and catering context. And so for a lot of jobs, I think their roles have changed during this pandemic as well. You know, a lot of people who were in those roles did it because they were getting these really good social connections, right? You know, you see the same person in a restaurant, or you go to the same coffee shop, and, you know, your barista or retail employees, and that interpersonal connection was really a nice thing about the job. And, you know, with social distancing, and now we've got barriers and masks and, you know, other things, it's really changed the nature of that the service workers as well. And so, you know, as we kind of return to normal, I hope that those social connections and kind of that benefit that they can get from the social connection may also come back.
So you do think that changing our routine, you know, having to change it because so many other businesses are not there anymore, or these buildings have been purchased by other corporations moving in. So you think that we can handle that? Because that's really one of my concerns. Even with my daughter going back into work, I just worry that so many things have changed that it won't feel the same.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, I think at first it's going to be a mess. I think that it's going to take a lot of some conversations, some test and learn, people getting really clear on kind of their roles, their responsibilities, you know, what things can be done in person, what things can be done remotely. And I think that we're all going to be in this phase where we're kind of figuring it out. And the one thing I would say is I think a lot of people are maybe putting in permanent fixes for sort of temporary situations, right? A lot of companies are saying, you know, these really extreme things, right? Like work from anywhere. And, you know, and I just think there are some companies for which that's really not going to work. And so there are some organizations that I've been talking with, and they have like 50-person teams trying to figure this out, right? And, you know, how, right. What does the new normal look like? And I think that that's the kind of thing that they, you know, to figure it out, not be, you know, and just sort of try things and test things and see how it's going and constantly sort of feedback. And I think the role of managers is really going to change as they think about how to manage in this new environment for, you know, either remote work or people coming back in, you know, into work environments where they may not feel completely safe and secure quite yet. And so I think the managers and having a good, high-quality connection with your manager is going to be really important.
Teresa Glum, I'm so glad that you joined us tonight. I will be following you and checking out as many speeches you make because I'm very curious about this. So thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you.
And thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care of yourself.
You take care, too. Bye.
All right. That was Teresa Glum, who is the Toro Company David M. Lilly Chair in the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. We'll be back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
What? What? What do you do? I want to know. Well, here is the segment, you guys. It's called So What Do You Do? And it's all about finding organizations, companies, or businesses that you've never heard of before, but they do really great work. And we're so excited to introduce to you today, tonight, the Aliveness Project. 40 years this week, 40 years ago, AIDS was discovered. And the fight has been on ever since, including at Minnesota's Aliveness Project. Now, their executive director, Matt Tuburin, I'm going to get it right. He joins us to discuss where we are today. Matt is brought to you via Shift Real Estate Hotline. Hey, Matt, welcome.
Good evening, Darlene. It's an honor to be on talking with you tonight about our fight to HIV. And it's a shame that it's 40 years and we're still in this, but a lot of good work and a lot of work ahead as well.
A lot of work when it comes to medicine over the years. It's been quite remarkable. But to see that we have no cure in sight has to be very frustrating for the Aliveness Project as well.
It is. It's frustrating. There's a lot of progress that's being made. I would love nothing more than to be the last executive director of the Liveness Project and to be able to turn out the lights and say, you know, our work's not needed. I recently heard an interview with Dr. Fauci, and he said, I want to get over COVID so I can get back to working on a cure for HIV. So the hope is there. They're working there, but as of today, there's no cure.
You know, he was one of the really important people who got involved in trying to find a cure. And it's got to be frustrating for him to know that today we still don't have that. But I love the idea of him wanting to get back to researching this so we can get a cure. Do you expect to have one in the next, 5 years, the next 50 years? Where do you stand?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I know he did not want deadline on that, but after what we saw with what science was able to do with COVID in the past year, certainly more hope. But it is important for folks to understand that although there is not a cure, that sort of, as you said, the medical advances, it is possible that someone today with HIV can live a long and healthy life as long as they're in medical care, they're on medications, taking them routinely. Folks living with HIV, it's not a death sentence. They can live a long and healthy life.
Being an executive director, what puzzles you most about AIDS?
There are a number of things. I think although AIDS does not discriminate, whether you're poor or where you live, we continue to see HIV disproportionately impact certain communities. And so, when you talk about HIV, folks often, the first thing that you think of are gay men, and that's certainly still true, still very much the population that is at greatest risk. But we also see continuing growth in communities of color, particularly in Minnesota. And that's troubling. I think we continue to make improvements in HIV, but there are still some communities that are being left behind for reasons. And so that's one of the things that we are really focused on right now.
One of the things that frustrates me is that we see that this has spread across the world, but we don't hear the world saying there is no cure. We've even heard of certain African countries that said to our country, we have the cure. We know what the cure is. Have you heard that before? And is that still, we're searching for that, or is that true?
Some charlatan stuff that's out there. Thankfully, it's pretty under the radar, but particularly, as you said, folks coming from other countries. I know of someone who was just recently telling me that they were born in Africa, they live in Minnesota now, and they had been sending thousands and thousands of dollars to this, person who was promising them some sort of cure mixture, and it was, things like that are just heartbreaking. But trying to get out information and just that misinformation that's out there.
When we heard 40 years ago the start of HIV and AIDS, it kept growing and it kept growing, and all of a sudden you got people within that circle who contracted this horrible thing, but they all started looking different. You had every color of the rainbow, people who were getting this. So it has really infected and hurt the majority of the countries, here on the planet even, but we still hear so little about a cure. So people have been giving money like you just talked about a moment ago, and they feel like, okay, it's been 40 years, should I just stop? What would you say to people who are thinking about donating, but are really frustrated because we don't seem to be moving forward?
So here's the exciting thing, and this is what gets me up in the morning every day, is that, so in Minnesota, almost every single day, someone is newly diagnosed with HIV, and that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. We have the knowledge, we have the tools, we have the information to end HIV without a cure, but we keep getting set back. And so we have a number of tools in the toolbox. The medications today are very, very good. We also have PrEP, which is a preventative medication where someone who's at high risk can take this medication and it will prevent them from becoming infected with HIV. Mm-hmm. And there's a thing called undetectable equals untransmittable. So for someone living with HIV who's taking their medications, the virus is at such a low level in the body that it's undetectable. So that means two great things. One, it means they can live a long and healthy life. And two, it means they cannot infect someone else. So it's not rocket science. We just got to get everyone tested and knowing their status. And for folks who are positive, getting them on care and help supporting them and keeping them in care. You know, and we could get to zero new infections in Minnesota. But we can talk a bit more about this. Unfortunately, this past year, we're seeing a significant increase. And I think your listeners will be shocked to hear that the Minnesota Department of Health has announced an HIV outbreak. This is the first time in the history of Minnesota that the health department has announced an HIV outbreak. And it's in the Twin Cities, largely tied to the homeless encampments. And then also just recently they announced one in Duluth as well. So here we thought we were making progress and we were really starting to see numbers go down. And now in this past year, we're seeing a big increase and it's really troublesome and disheartening. So that's really upsetting.
Out of all of the diseases that have been eradicated over the last 100 years here in our country, has there ever been a disease eradicated that did not have a cure?
That is a good question. I think that's a bit outside of my scope, but I think the important thing is that with proper public health measures and with safety precautions, that we can prevent each other from becoming infected with HIV, and we can keep folks healthy, and so we have these tools to do that.
Right, but we're managing the disease instead of curing it. It's the same thing with cancer, right? And so people feel, you know, strongly about it because there are pills to keep you feeling better as long as possible. But the bottom line is we all want to see cures for AIDS and HIV as well as cancer. And so it frustrates me, and I can just only imagine how frustrating it must be for you. How long have you been executive director?
I have been the executive director for about 2 years now. And I've been working in the HIV field for over a decade.
I really honor you for what you are doing and to hear that the fight is now on again and that it's here in Minnesota and there is an outbreak really breaks my heart. It scares me for those LGBTQIA community that I know and love that are part of my family. And it's terrifying. You know, how do we get people to think again about AIDS and HIV when for so long now, for almost 40 years, we have had these medicines that have really helped people manage this whole disease?
Well, there's some simple things that folks can do. They can get tested and know their status. If they have a friend, family member, they can encourage them to get tested and know their status. And knowing your status is a really important piece. And then for folks who are living with HIV, you know, I do think it's important for them to know that there are places like Aliveness, that there are places that can support them, and that it's not a death sentence. It doesn't need to be, that we're here to support you. And if folks have questions, if they have concerns, if they're living with HIV and are afraid, know that there's folks out there who can help through that journey.
Well, it really is something that lays on our hearts. And finally, of course, it's Pride Month. And I'm just wondering how you can advise us as heterosexuals how we should celebrate Pride Month, because so many people who have loved ones in their family, I don't think there's any family that's not been touched by the gay community, and it's in a beautiful way as well. But some, you know, families still can't handle it. I'm just wondering how should we as heterosexuals celebrate Pride Month? What is appropriate?
I think being out there, being supportive, is a really amazing thing is to be there and celebrate. And that's what Pride really is at its core, is a celebration and a celebration of community, and of us all as a community. And so, being there, being in support, you know, I don't know if you've seen, there's some group mom hugs, that'll go out at Pride and moms who give hugs. That is a really powerful thing. And, you know, people say I've, you know, haven't hugged my mom in 10 years or, you know, was ostracized from my family. And there's really beautiful things like that that happen at Pride all the time. So, you know, it can be very family friendly. It's very love. It's a love bubble.
It is a love bubble. That's the perfect way to put that, Matt. Thank you so much for that. I know I'll be involved this week, and I'm just praying that there will be a cure, because without that, we may start hearing about more and more outbreaks, or maybe there some of the states may be keeping it quiet. But we know how this started 40 years ago. Those of us that were living then, we know how it started, and the outbreak spread quickly. So we're just praying that it doesn't do that again. So if people want to donate, where do they go?
You can find us at our website, aliveness.org, or on any of your favorite social media platforms. We would be honored and appreciate your support in joining us in the fight against AIDS.
So glad that you joined us tonight, Matt. Thank you very much.
Wonderful, Geraldine. Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
My goodness. Did you just hear that we have another outbreak? We have an outbreak here in the Twin Cities. We have an outbreak of HIV/AIDS in the Twin Cities. That is news to me. So, yeah, stay vigilant. Stay on it. Call your loved ones. Let them know that this is happening here. Let them know to be careful. It doesn't hurt to remind them. I know I will be reminding them. All right, we're going to have to take a break and talk a little bit more about Center Stage that's coming up. Also, I do want to talk about how difficult it is for young people who are gay and they have a hard time with their families, and to hear the stories that hurt so badly, how parents can throw their children out on the streets with nothing, absolutely nothing. Some do this and they just feel like, I don't have a child that's gay. I can't handle that. My goodness. Lots more to talk about. We'll be back. It is now 8:53 here at WCCO. Welcome back. As you heard us talking about this HIV/AIDS outbreak that is happening in the Twin Cities, please educate yourselves, those of you who weren't around 40 years ago, to really understand how this unfolded. And oh my God, it was such a challenge. And there are still so many families that cannot handle it when one of their children or a loved one or a dear friend comes forward and says, hey, I'm gay. And they can't handle it. They walk away or they stop calling and they just give up on them. Some of them kick their children out of the house and tell them, I don't own you anymore. You go live your life. I can't handle having a gay child. Remarkable. Sad. Tragic. And as you hear these stories, some people just think, well, you know, eventually they'll get over it. They'll get over getting kicked out of the house. I just can't deal with it. I can't deal with it. We have to fortify the love we have for our family when they're young. And we have to continue fortifying that love. If they come up to us at 16 years old and say, I am gay, you should be able, I believe, you should be able to love them. They are yours. They are mine. Be able to love them. Reconsider the idea of kicking your children out of the house because they are gay. Reconsider not talking to your siblings because one of them is gay. Reconsider what love really means in your family. It's not okay. If you're listening to a religious leader who tells you if your child is gay, get rid of them, kick them out. You should go to that religious leader and say, just try saying to them, I love that child of mine. I love that child. And love, there's no room for putting him out on the streets. There's no room for that. Love does not encompass that. That's not what love is, kicking your gay child out of the house. I know. I have a gay child, and I absolutely adore him. I adore his partner. So as you think about what is happening right now with AIDS, we have an outbreak. We just heard the Aliveness Project leader, Matt, tell us this. I don't know if you've heard, Jalen, but there's a new outbreak here in Minnesota of HIV and AIDS. We have to stay on top of this. We have to check on our family and say, are you okay? Is everything okay? Be careful. Be safe. Make sure you get checked. That's love. So those of you that want to hate those that are not like you, or you want to hate those that came out of you, the mothers who turned their back on their children, I do not understand it, and I do not receive it. I don't. And I'm so grateful that my heart is completely open to my child. my sister. I have a sister, an older sister who's gay. I love her and her wife. So for those of you who are listening, you may want to turn off the radio now or say, well, I disagree with her. It's okay for us to disagree. But if you want to have a sensible conversation about it from the love perspective, especially if it is all about being your church not agreeing with it, go back to the Bible and read about love. Or go back to your sacred text and read about love. We have got to stop hating each other. Right? None of us are the same. Why would we ever expect to be? As we wrap up this hour, just know that next hour is all about Center Stage. All things arts and entertainment. We believe you ought to know about it. And boy, are things coming back. We are hearing a lot about theaters opening up, possibly. Rohan Preston is going to join us to talk about that. I haven't had Rohan on for a long time since the pandemic, so I'm really excited that the lead theater critic at the Star Tribune is joining us tonight. You do not want to miss that. And do remember that all of these shows that you're going to start hearing about, let's try our best to support them. Let's do our best to support them, because we know here in Minnesota that the arts are really critical to who we are. And I'm so grateful for that. Thanks for listening, you guys. Center Stage is next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.